From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
After 3 years of dealing with COVID-19, both federal and state COVID restrictions are now over.
With the perseverance and grit of the people of Illinois, and with 26 million vaccine doses administered, I couldn't be happier to announce today that all national and state COVID-19 related emergency declarations have finally come to an end.
An historic moment this week, the end of the COVID-19 emergency declaration. We'll discuss what that means going forward. And state lawmakers, they're getting close to their scheduled adjournment. Will they get a budget done in time? That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and along with us we have Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And joining us, we have Jerry Nowicki. He is the Bureau Chief for Capital News Illinois. Jerry, good to have you along.
Yeah, good to be here, Sean.
And also with us, Brendan Moore. He is the Illinois Government and Politics Reporter for Lee Enterprises. And Brendan, good to have you back with us as well.
Glad to be back, Sean.
So let's start with this budget. Jerry, I'll go to you first. We have been hearing a real moving target for expected revenues, both of the current year and also the next year. And I guess the latest is the state will have less money to spend than maybe what was projected just a few months ago. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the governor's office has always been a little bit more conservative than the legislative forecasting agency. But this week, the governor decreased its current year revenue estimate just because of the pace at which revenues declined in the month of April, which is it's basically the biggest month of the year for revenues because that's when people are filing their taxes. And that's kind of when you find out what the situation is for current year. So that basically means what the governor had proposed in the February budget for a supplemental spending plan for the current year would actually now put it, put spending above revenues. We'd be spending a little bit more, but that's about $790 million now that, you know, they could take into account whether they want to allocate that or whether it'll need to be allocated in the next fiscal year. So the long story short and all that is that it was also accompanied by a increase for the upcoming year revenue. So it looks like there's going to be a smaller pie that lawmakers are looking to slice from as they determine which programs they're going to fund in the upcoming budget year.
And of course, Brendan, this is coming out of a pandemic. Everybody had kept their powder dry, so to speak, for a time when it came to asking for more funds because of the pandemic. But now it seems as though we've been hearing budget requests coming out of the woodwork. Should they temper their enthusiasm then for more money? I mean, what's this doing to budget negotiations?
Yeah, I think that the downward revisions from both CACFA and the governor's budget office for this fiscal year have certainly made the governor's office and legislative leaders' job a little bit easier in terms of tempering expectations from lawmakers and advocates and in terms of budget requests. We've had a couple of really flush years from a fiscal perspective. We've had a few April surprises where instead of the revenues being way down, they were way up. And that allowed, obviously, the state to invest back in pay down debt and put more money into pensions and really get its fiscal house in order. And obviously, there were projections that there would be a little bit more room, more money to play with this year as well. And a bunch of groups were thinking, well, now is the time to make our asks because obviously this was not going to last. And a lot of these groups, knowing that there was some money to play with, made their initial ask that were probably a little bit higher than maybe they would have done a few years ago. But obviously, they've had to temper their expectations given the amount the lack of revenue or the lower projected revenues for this year. And in addition, you also have some other budgetary pressures to deal with. There's the healthcare program for undocumented immigrants that was started a few years ago that has blown way past its expected cost. I believe the governor's office for the next fiscal year had projected it would cost about $220 million to cover undocumented immigrants over the age of 42. It's been revised up to about $1.1 billion. So you have a huge gap there that needs to be filled. And then you also have a lot of other groups that are asking for funds as well, because even though it's been a flush year for from a fiscal perspective, it hasn't been it's been some pretty lean years for a lot of these groups that need funds. So there's a lot of groups competing for a slice of the pie. But as Jerry said, it's appearing like it's going to be a smaller pie to cut from.
Well, Charlie, you've watched a lot of budget negotiations through the years. It's pretty typical that we get to this point and we're arguing over some numbers back and forth. In some cases through the years, not the best fiscal practices. We have seen at times where revenue estimates just magically go up, and that makes the budget look a little more balanced as they get ready for the next year. But what do you expect is going to happen here?
Well, I would guess that when all is said and done and the final budget bills clear the legislature and head to the governor, is going to be an awful lot of disappointed people. Brendan, you did a story a week or so ago where you enumerated some of the things that people were asking, and I added some of the stuff up, and I think the asks came out to something in excess of $3 billion, and there's no way that that's going to happen. And a lot of people are going to be disappointed. Just as an example, the incoming mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, and local municipalities endorsed an idea that the local share of the income tax should be returned to 10%, as it was when the income tax was enacted back in 69, instead of around 6%. Well, there's no way that's going to happen. The progressive lawmakers would like to have a child tax credit of $700 for every child younger than 17 for families that are earning less than $75,000. But that would cost $700 million to $900 million. So I don't think that's going to happen. And with, as I mentioned, the cost of providing health insurance through the, I guess it's through the Medicaid program or similar to Medicaid for folks who are here who don't have documentation has ballooned. And I think, what did you say, that the estimate is now $1.1 billion, up from something like $200 million? I don't see that happening. But on the other hand, I would argue that those people are going to get health care. It's not likely that they'll show up at an emergency room and the folks at the desk will say, well, show us your health insurance. Well, we don't have it. Okay, out on the street. That's not going to happen. They're going to get the care. And in some cases, because they are because they do not have insurance, they will not get the kind of diagnostic tests earlier on. They'll wait longer before they actually go to get health care when they're sicker, and it'll cost more. So it's a cost that's going to come from somewhere. We can't just ignore it.
Why? Go ahead, Charlie.
I was going to say, but I don't think it'll be in this year's budget to that extent. But there's, you know, the educators want, instead of a $350 million increase in the evidence-based formula, they say it should be closer to $550 million. There's just a whole ton of stuff out there. And as they say, there's going to be a lot of disappointed people when the hammer finally comes down on this.
Jerry, you've written about this this plan to provide the health care to undocumented immigrants. Why the big difference, though? We've talked about that. There were $250 million to $1.1 billion now is what it's being estimated. That seems like that was way off target or something has changed. What caused that?
Well, the part of the reason is they did a poor job estimating the number of people who would be eligible. They relied on American Community Survey data that some outside entity had analyzed. It was woefully short. They underestimated the level of care that would be needed for some of these individuals who, I forget who said it earlier, maybe Charlie, that they had gone so long without diagnostic care that there were some very sick individuals enrolling and it cost a lot of them to get them to a point of health. So there are just some major shortcomings in the way they estimated it. But what they've done now is just assumed that the program will grow by 10% each month like it has been in recent months, rather than trying to determine the pool of eligible people or whatever else. They're just saying, okay, it's going to continue to grow at this rate, and we need to be prepared to spend the amount of money to continue to provide this care.
Brendan, as we get closer to trying to put this budget together, and I'm expecting that maybe something could come out as early as the middle of next week, since we are talking about a potential adjournment date of May 19th, only a week away from as we sit down to record this show, are there some things that the governor is definitely going to demand be in this budget? He called for many things during his budget address. Are there some things that are just untouchable when it comes to taking it off the table?
Yeah, I would say that it's a pretty safe bet that the governor's child or pre-K plan or some version of it is going to be in the final budget. You can remember, that basically would provide a path to universal pre-K in the state. I believe it's called Smart Start Illinois. That received bipartisan accolades when it was announced. I think that lawmakers want to keep that in. It is new spending, but it's spending in a popular area, popular for lawmakers. So I think that there will be some version of that. I think it's a safe bet that the $350 million for increased funding for K-12 or through the evidence-based funding formula will stay in. And I think that the governor has been pretty clear that whatever ends up in this budget, it has to be balanced. As Jerry said earlier, governor's team have been more conservative in general in their budget projections than some other agencies have been. And they've been cautioning for months that, we can't start all these new programs or significantly increase spending, knowing that revenue high post COVID was going to be winding down, and the economy may go into a recession. Other factors may obviously cut the size of the pie. So I think there are certainly a few things that are kind of untouchable. I think his pre-K plan, more money for K-12 education. And I think that it has to be, it'll have to be a balanced budget. And that will, another thing, full payment of for the pension obligation. I think the governor's done that every year he's been in there, and I don't see him changing course on that. So there'll be a few things, but I think that beyond that, there will be a little bit of wiggle room as they negotiate the final details.
And Jerry, would you agree with that? Those are the things that are pretty much for sure going to be in the budget?
Well, yeah, I think so. And the one of the important things to note here is, despite, we've seen a couple revenue revisions downward in recent weeks, is that there's the amount of available revenues is still pretty close, within 1% actually of what the governor had proposed in February. So a lot of the things contained within his budget are still very doable. The main variables being the added cost for non-citizen health care. They're going to have to try to figure out a way to defray some of that, the governor said yesterday, maybe through co-pays or different proposals. But all things considered, The governor is going to have a lot of leeway to do the things he said he wanted to do in February. Just almost nothing beyond that without affecting some of the proposals that he made. So,
Charlie, I'll give you the last word on this, but I did want to ask you, when it comes to the state's budget, I mean, we're looking ahead. We're looking to finish out this year. We're looking ahead to the next fiscal year. And we really don't know what the economy could bring. I mean, while the estimates are what they are right now, who knows 6 months from now if we could be slipping into a recession, maybe a major recession. Nobody's really quite sure. So far, the economy's been pretty strong. But is that even more reason to be conservative if you're the Democrats going forward and putting a budget together?
Yeah, I think it pays to be cautious. And as a matter of fact, that's what the legislature and the governor have done for the last several years. And as a result, the dollars have come in much, much higher level than what we anticipated. And as was mentioned, we've used some of that excess not to create new programs, but to pay back everything we owed to the feds for the borrowing that we did early on in the pandemic, to prepay, if you will, some of the pension obligations, to put more money into the rainy day fund. And so those were all positive things. And as a matter of fact, earlier this week, the Civic Federation, which is a kind of a government watchdog, business-oriented group up in Chicago, put out a report, and it says in its news release, it says it offered its support for Governor Pritzker's proposed FY24 budget. And they said the budget reflects the state's continued recovery from the pandemic-fueled recession. The state has seen unexpected revenue growth and budget surpluses, and the Civic Federation strongly supported the governor's prioritization of using the surplus funds to pay down debt, make supplemental pension payments, and increase reserves. And the Civic Federation pointed out that we've had credit upgrades, and they also supported increasing appropriation for the MAP program, the Monetary Award Program, which gives grants to college students, and for the evidence-based funding formula. But they urged the governor to be cautious about increasing agency spending over the previous year. And they also noted that the state should come up with a long-term financial plan to take into account what you said earlier, Sean, the fact that there may be a recession coming, the strains of inflation. And they say that the state needs a long-term strategy to safeguard its stronger financial position while at the same time ensuring long-term financial sustainability. So that's a good sign, and that's something that should help the governor hold his position against some of these requests for added spending. But as you mentioned, there are tricks, and now I'm going back to the olden days. There was one occasion, this was Governor Thompson at the time, when Governor Thompson and the legislative leaders were, oh, I don't know, $50, $60 million apart on what the legislators wanted to spend and what the governor said was available. And they resolved that the governor just upped his revenue estimate by however much the difference was. Or there have been times when a payment would be delayed, and instead of making a payment at the end of June, they would wait and do it in the first of July, and that would kick it into the next fiscal year. So there are those kind of, I guess you would call them accounting tricks. But those are things that under Pritzker and under Comptroller Susana Mendoza, we've avoided in recent years.
All right. Well, I mentioned at the start of the show a pretty historic moment this week. It was back in March of 2020 when Governor J.B. Pritzker issued his first COVID-19 disaster declaration. He used that to issue other orders that included closing schools, some businesses, requiring the wearing of masks. And now the emergency declaration has come to an end. It expired this week. And Jerry, this has been a divisive issue, certainly, but the governor has stayed pretty much to his plan all along. He says he followed the science. He believes that saved lives. This really is a moment worth marking, though, I would think.
It is. There was a celebratory, to an extent, news conference praising healthcare workers for what they've been through in that span. But one of the things that's always important to note when talking about the disaster declaration is that long ago, the types of restrictions that first coincided with it have expired, right? So you're not, there's no mask mandate, there's no limiting how many people can be in a restaurant or anything like that. That's been expired now for months. But what had still been in effect because of the declaration was increased SNAP benefits and like Medicaid enrollees didn't have to reapply every year like they will now have to. So, and now that's all coming to an end because the federal government has ended its declaration, and so has the state. So it's gonna have a major impact in that regard on the type of like supplemental nutrition benefits that people are receiving.
Brendan, many people though have been critical of the governor's approach.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think that the pandemic certainly brought out the partisan divisions in this state and in this country. Yesterday, actually, on the House floor, I believe it was State Rep. Blaine Wilhauer gave a speech on the floor thanking Governor Pritzker for finally ending the emergency order, and it was in snark. He thanked him for the shutting down schools and businesses and basically kind of saying how difficult, how awful things were because of what he viewed as a heavy-handed response to the pandemic. Obviously, the governor yesterday was over at the Sangamon County Board of Public Health with a bunch of healthcare workers, thanking them for their service during the pandemic, calling them heroes. And so I think that it was clear that the pandemic was a very disruptive force in everybody's lives. It was difficult. A lot of people died. And then obviously there was the impact on businesses being closed and children not being able to go to school in person. And so I think that people, obviously it was disruptive and impactful, and perhaps depending on your political view, in different ways. And I think that the country was already divided, the state was already divided, and I think that the pandemic and some of the actions taken during the pandemic just kind of brought that out into view. I think most would say that from a public health perspective, that he listened to the public health experts and tried to do the best that he could with the information that he had to save as many lives as possible. But there are certain swaths of the state where that's just not going to be accepted.
Yeah, and Charlie, certainly the polling through the last few years has shown that overall the public has supported the governor.
Yeah, I think that's true. One of the things that I found interesting in one of the interviews that the governor did was he mentioned that in the very beginning of the COVID pandemic, he got a report from researchers at the U of I. It was an analysis by scientists, mathematicians. They're trying to estimate how many deaths and hospitalizations would occur under various scenarios. If the state didn't do anything, if it imposed only moderate measures, or if it actually imposed significant measures, such as what the governor actually did. And he said, and this is his quote, "And without any mitigations, their projection was just in the Chicago area alone, we would see 40,000 deaths in approximately 4 months." End of quote. And he said he keeps a copy of that report in his office. And that struck me. 40,000 deaths in 4 months, and now, 3 years later, we've had roughly 37,000 deaths. So people could argue about their freedoms were restricted and blah, 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 but the fact of the matter is lives were saved because of the stay-at-home orders, because of restaurants being closed. And that's something you really can't calculate, how many people are alive today who would not have been alive had the governor not taken these actions. And as somebody who's a senior citizen and diabetic, I'm very glad that he did take those, because if not, I maybe wouldn't even be here.
Let's go down to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's go to you first this time.
All righty. Well, this is a kind of a follow-up on our discussion about the COVID pandemic. The governor this past week signed legislation that would cover Chicago first responders who were severely stricken by COVID-19 before the vaccines were available, would cover them for full active duty benefits. And apparently, well, not apparently, this actually happened, that in the early days of the pandemic, the first responders who contracted COVID were not covered for active duty. It wasn't regarded as something that they got because of their work, unless they died, by the board that governs those benefits for Chicago Police and Fire. Now, under the state law for the rest of the state, someone, a policeman or a firefighter who contracted COVID, was assumed to have gotten that on the job, and so they were entitled to full disability benefits. One of the people affected by that was Comptroller Mendoza's brother, Joaquin Mendoza, who was a sergeant in the Chicago Police Department. And his case went before the city's board, and they decided not to give disability pensions to officers disabled by COVID. And so the comptroller sort of got the ball rolling in the General Assembly. So anyway, that bill got signed into law. It passed the legislature without any no votes in either the House or the Senate. And it is now the second new law to come out of the 103rd General Assembly.
Jerry?
A measure that would ban the use of electronic cigarettes inside of public buildings in Illinois, adding it to the Smoke-Free Illinois Act. Basically, that's vapes and other such e-cigs. That will only need a signature from the governor to become law.
All right. And Brendan?
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is going to be in Peoria tonight. He's keynoting the Peoria-Tazewell Lincoln Day dinner, which is one of the more prominent events in Republican politics in the state. Obviously pretty significant, because DeSantis is probably going to announce a run for president sometime in the next few weeks. Although DeSantis is maybe a little more interesting because he's been a foil of Governor J.B. Pritzker. Basically, Illinois and Florida have kind of gone in opposite directions since they were both elected in 2018. And it's a contrast that Governor Pritzker has definitely exploited and seeks to make mention of whenever he can, especially on a lot of these culture war issues that the governor thinks doesn't play well most places. But I guess tonight we will see if it plays in Peoria.
All right. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Brendan Moore with Lee Enterprises, and Jerry Nowicki with Capital News Illinois. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.